Hello, I am Paige Albiniak, Editorial Director of Promax BDA, and this is the Daily Brief Podcast. Today, we're checking in with a few leading-edge experts about how television is evolving from a dumb box into a smart device, and what having access to all of that data can mean for marketers. During a session at Promax BDA, the conference, Jason D'Amata, Executive Editor at TV Rev and CEO and founder of Fabric Media, spoke with Jeff Katz, SVP at Fox Networks Group, Stephen Moldering, VP at iSpot TV, and Amanda Taylor, CEO and co-founder of Dance On, about how programmers and showrunners can leverage this flood of data to acquire and retain fans. Let's listen in to what they have to say.
I want to start by apologizing for swearing, because we're going to talk some here today. The goal is to have some fun. We're going to talk about the boob tube or the idiot box or whatever you want to call it, but television. A lot of people call it in trouble, and I think that's one of the things we want to question here today. Let's start with some data. We've got some exclusive data coming off TVs. It's widely accepted that smart TVs will be the norm because 99% of all televisions coming out are smart TVs. You might like to know that there's two dominant players in the smart TV market, Samsung and Vizio. More interesting, Samsung's a walled garden. They're setting themselves up to be a special industry player, and then Vizio and everybody else. As these things are internet connected, I think one of the big questions is, why do people getting boxes and putting them on their smart TVs? I don't know. The next thing I want to show you guys is a complicated chart, but I like it a lot. If you look up on the top right, the blue is, this is share of advertising dollars. So a lot of us work in television and have been like, oh, what's going to happen? There's a lot of things. TV's leveled off. It's still $80 billion industry. It's doing well. You can see if you're white, you're in the news business. It's been a problem. Below that, you've got magazines, which have sort of leveled off. And you've got radio, which has also sort of leveled off, found its floor. I think people appreciate those mediums. If anything, audio is growing. To the bottom right is mobile and digital, just on a skyrocket up. And so that, I think, sums up within that context is people are consuming content differently. It's changing the television business, as you know. And it brings up this question is like, what does it mean? What does it mean for people in this industry who are running around with like chickens with their head cut off? Many of them, creatives, networks, brands, and audiences. Luckily, we have some very good speakers here today that have their heads on straight, mostly. I'd like to introduce them. We've got Jeff Katz, SVP of Advertising at Fox Network Group, Amanda Taylor, who founded Dance On. Very excited to have her here, and Steve Moldering from iSpot. So, give him a round of applause.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming down, you guys. I thought we'd start off by letting each one of you talk. I think you're sitting in almost order. So, Amanda, let's go to you. So, Amanda, tell us about Dance On.
Okay. Dance On is a next generation programming brand for dance and music entertainment. We basically are a media company and programming brand, consumer facing brand, and we're distributed across social video platforms, so like YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, Musical.ly, and then also have an eye towards premium platforms and premium bundles. We have a slate deal with Verizon where our channel and a ton of premium content is being distributed on their Go90 platform, as an example. And we're entirely focused in the dance and music category, which is a really incredibly powerful category in digital. 50% of YouTube's views are music-related views, and a lot of that type of content tends to go viral. So we've basically brought together a lot of those formats in short form and taken from that short form content, longer form, linear, more premium formats that we've developed from the short form.
Are you saying that you get 1 billion views a month?
We do.
And do you do that on television? Does any of that come from television?
No, that's not TV. That's all digital video.
So this is the face of eating television's lunch. How did you do it?
Well, I've been at this for a while. I've been at it for 6 years. I started in talent management and the agency world and identified that there were a lot of influencers in this category that were programming video content on their own and didn't really have a business model. They were just putting their work out there. And so once we were able to say, okay, there's actually multiple lines of revenue around this business, and if you brought it all together and built a brand around it and really started to elevate it and bring it to new platforms, that there's something really powerful in owning that. So it's been a relatively long road, but we've had some really good partners get excited about what we're doing, like AMC Networks, who are on our board. They're investors. Madonna is a part of our company. She's a co-founder. Gaio Siri, who runs Maverick, and Nigel Lithgow, also, who's on our board and, you know, created So You Think You Can Dance, was an executive producer of American Idol. We have a lot of great folks with traditional backgrounds and music backgrounds that are helping us take it to the next level.
Tell us a little bit about your audience and who is consuming this content and what kind of content it is.
Our brand skews female. We're about 60% female, which is great too, because I think in the music category, women are somewhat underserved. And we really focus on a younger audience, like young millennial and Gen Z, so teen audience. And teens really have a huge impact in music and what's charting in Billboard's Top 40 as an example. So it's a great audience to go after in this category. For our new show, Boy Squad, and this came actually very organically out of video content, short form content that we were creating, and we realized there was a brand around the Boy Squad crew. Matt Stefanina is the most influential dancer choreographer in the world. He has over 10 million followers across platforms, and he has successfully launched a lot of young kid talent in this category. And so we started to identify who were the next generation kids and brought them together into one crew. And yeah, really excited about that.
Dropping the mic. Thank you, Amanda. We're going to come back to that. Like totally fascinating.
Young Rupert Murdoch. Right? Yeah. Well, I mean, building that business the way that you did is not that different than how great media bands have been built historically. You just have alternative distribution and more data to inform what you're doing. Really cool.
All right, next up, Steve Maldarek. Do you want to take us through? You're from iSpot TV. Steve, tell us about iSpot.
So a lot of you use our, I guess, go to our public site to look up creatives, whether they're competitive or you're looking at some of your colleagues' work. But we're also a real-time media measurement company. We work with a lot of the networks, a lot of the brands, and all the studios here in town to help them understand, you know, how viewers are responding to their creatives. Are they getting good attention scores, or are they converting to some kind of an action? So we create some really cool analytics for all our partners in real time. So that's what we do at iSpot.
How do you get your data? Where does the data come from?
We have a partnership with Vizio, and their sample, or their, you know, all their devices represent about 10 million in around the country. And so we partner with Vizio for that data.
And Steve, just a little
all
background.
Device, smart TV devices.
A little background. You worked in television for how long?
Too long. I'm not going to mention it now here tonight. I've been, you know, prior to coming to iSpot, I was working for a lot of the syndication companies here in town. And I got to tell you, if I had some of this data that we have available to us today, I wish I had it back then, because we were flying blind many years in syndication trying to find eyeballs for our programs. And what you'll see today is some pretty cool stuff that'll help you you know, better your campaigns for your programs or for your show promos.
And can we just throw to the internet real quick again? Let's see how fast these guys are with this. Bam! Look at that. So what we're looking at right now is the inside the iSpot dashboard real time, a 2-week view of CNN. So just to give you an idea of what iSpot looks like inside, if you are a subscribing member, anything you want to add to this, Steve? I mean, we have up here impression type that's measuring VOD. Does it measure? It looks like CNN is their entire.
Yeah, CNN would probably be, it's not a good example because it's a lot of the viewership on CNN is live. So you're not going to see a lot of time shifted VOD or OTT for a news program. But if it was an entertainment program, you would see a lot more activity in time shifted VOD and OTT.
And then view rates, what's this here? What's a view rate?
So there's two metrics there. It's impressions, and that's, you know, a for every device that where the ad is being seen, or on, and it has the impression, very digital-like metrics, and it's 3 seconds, any portion of it, in order to be counted as an impression. And the view rate, or attention score, as we call it, is it's a an average of all time shifted, and not it's all an average of live and live plus same day data, and that's they have to watch it from the beginning, and we calculate it all the way through different quartiles, and really, and see-through rates to see how well your viewers are responding to your creatives.
So this is just, I got to correct, this is attention from the glass. The television has to be on, and it doesn't matter if it's OTT,
doesn't
VOD,
matter.
Linear, got it, and it's real time.
That's the uniqueness about smart TVs, is it doesn't matter what the source is, it's all agnostic.
And then how many of those Vizio TVs are out there?
It's 10 million.
10 million, that's more than the Nielsen sample.
Actually, more.
Slightly more. Right?
Vizio has more devices in the smallest DMA than Nielsen has in entire sample.
That's And in English, that means it's a bit large. So one more thing, since we have a lot of people who like to produce content here or who are in the content business, we're looking at Wonder Woman, all the different trailers in Wonder Woman that have come out. iSpot gets them all.
Watch them.
And then when, if you look at view rate, so if I understand it correctly, it's, you know, in the 80s and the 90s, and then you see things that are up in 96. So this is the most, this is the most impactful ad for Wonder Woman, and it instructs the networks on what, where to put their bets. All right. Thank you, Steve. We'll come right back to you. So without further ado, I didn't make a slide for you, so I'm just going to.
I'll do it in person.
Fox, I don't know if anybody here has heard of Fox Network Group.
Yeah, so Fox Networks is Fox Broadcasting, Fox Sports, FX Networks, and National Geographic Channel. It's not Fox News, which is run independently out of New York, I hear. So it's not in my portfolio. And we're making new ad products for digital, and some of those products and ad models hopefully will start to impact the ad model on broadcast commercial TV. You make no doubt about it, Fox is a commercial network. We're not Netflix, we're not Amazon Prime, whatever that is. We're selling our audience to advertisers, and we've invested a huge amount of money across those networks to really find the best storytellers and build attention at a way that's really not that comparable to what you see in alternative distribution, short form, Snapchat, and Facebook. No disrespect to those guys, but the television business is alive and well.
So, two things. Fox News, that's spelled wrong, isn't it? Isn't it F-A? No, I'm just kidding. We're going to get to...
Keep it fair and balanced, Jace.
Yeah, sorry. Your advanced advertising?
Yeah.
Fox? You want to set it up?
Yeah, well, this was a sizzle for the sales team at the beginning of the year that kind of foreshadowed where we're headed. The point of it was really to start to think about the overall experience of watching Fox programming on our owned and operated distribution endpoints for digital, like Fox Now, on cable, VOD, and with our distribution partners like Hulu and YouTube and all the other virtual MVPDs that are out there. Like, in digital, we have this chance not to just simply run commercials, no disrespect to what iSpot's tracking, but to think about that time that we used to use for commercial breaks to transfer that attention in a less cluttered and more focused way so that brands can actually bust through around our programming. And we're going to show some examples of what comes after television commercials, and it's very heavily driven by broadcast design.
Let's go on to move on to viewing habits. Thank you guys for the intro. Excited to have different perspectives in the market. All right, I want to talk about just real quickly about this whole bundling. So this stat here shows the likelihood of paid TV subscribers to bounce on their to cancel their service but they're not cutting the cord, right? So first question I have is, when you think about bundling and rebundling, Jeff, your thoughts on this? I know you've worked a lot with the cable operators over the years. Everybody's coming out with a new package. Everybody has a new program. What does that mean for, you know, and is the cord getting cut or is it getting moved?
Yeah, I think that's kind of what's actually happening now. You know, we're starting to see the first apps from the big branded cable, formerly known as cable providers, the MVPDs. So, for example, at home, I have Charter Spectrum, but I use the Charter Spectrum app on Roku. I don't use their DVR. And I think we'll see apps on Apple TV, Roku, Amazon, Xbox, coming from your traditional cable provider. And they've got tons of legacy infrastructure to market and promote those services. So, you know, I think the virtual MVPDs from Hulu and YouTube are great. We're part of them. We want the most people to see FX programming as possible. We want the most people to see Fox Sports as possible. But ultimately, if I had to bet right now, it wouldn't necessarily be a new upstart brand. It's likely to come from the DirecTVs, AT&Ts, Verizons of the world as they get smarter about apps that run across all platforms.
And Amanda, you've cultivated a real passionate following, niche content, high quality, as we saw before. Does this create an opportunity for you? And how are you dealing with does bundling open up doors for you?
Yeah, and I think it's sort of the beginning of this new wave of the rebundling. And, you know, a big initiative for us is to make sure that we get in there and are a part of them. Initially, right now, I think there's a lot of exploration and launching of mobile apps and things like that where platforms are ordering premium content. but hopefully it'll get to a place where they're starting to look at, you know, skinny bundles, really hyper verticalized, looking for offerings that are specific to maybe young women or specific to the music category. And then we would be a great brand to integrate into bundles like that.
And Go90 is one of your most popular platforms, correct?
Yeah, Go90, we have a big relationship with them. We're producing a ton of content and the channel is distributed on their platform.
And how do you, can you measure that? Do you get to see the viewership on those, or is it more of a, you deliver it and then they pay you and you're like, thanks?
We do get some data and we're getting more and more over time as they're changing and adapting the platform. So we are working with them and are responsive to the shows that are getting the most viewership and the most engagement. Those are the things that tend to get reordered. And then the ones that aren't working, obviously we scrap.
Interesting. All right, let's move on. More stats. Time shifting. So the stat we're looking at here shows the drop by demo. I don't know if you guys can make that out, but the it's obviously it's not good for traditional linear. Steve, does this pose measurement problems?
No, not at all. Actually, I was going to bring that up because most content is viewed on the screen, right, on the television or the device at home. And I think it's 92%. So regardless of the source or whatever the wherever the product's coming from, we'll be able to capture those creatives and be able to, you know, give metrics on those.
Wait, so if I have a Vizio TV and I'm watching Fox on my phone, like my TV's still listening and you're tracking it?
No. In terms of if you're watching it on the set.
On a screen. Not yet.
Yeah.
Not yet, right.
Yeah. You know, I'll make a bold prediction. I think broadcast TV is basically the Barker channel for on-demand in the future. You'll hear about shows will get some traction, there might be some buzz, but if you really want to watch something, on demand's really the way to do it. It's like, you know, the lessons that we've learned from Netflix and Amazon, making shows available at one time, allowing people to binge watch it, it's a better user experience. And ultimately, it's forcing traditional TV networks like ourselves to start to think about the context that people engage with our programming in, and we feel like we owe it to that commercial audience to make that experience less painful. And, you know, I used to be in the advertising business. It's nothing as good as a funny commercial, but like 11 commercials, I don't even know what I was watching by the time the commercial break is over sometimes.
Snack time. Amanda, I see this as being really good news for you because in the younger demos, that's where your base is. And so I would think that's a direct correlation with your channel. Would you agree?
Yeah, I mean, with the younger folks, they're definitely watching less and less traditional television. They're looking for content in digital. And then I do think there are a lot of challenges for advertisers and how they get in front of them. And we aim to be a solution for them.
Yeah, you could just flip this one over and she could use it in her marketing. It'd just be the opposite.
It'd be the opposite, right? It'd be up.
Millennials are crushing.
Right. Look at the people are ditching television. It's not true. People are still watching lots of TV. Here's an interesting stat that we worked with iSpot to get, and this shows the television saturation, TV ad saturation. So the good news for those of you creating promos is that almost 50% of all ad exposures are happening. Some people are, or half of viewing is happening, 500 plus ads for every 3-month period. But the other news is that 28% of TV devices are now impossible to reach, meaning the ads are getting skipped and or people are finding clever ways to avoid it completely. Did I read that right, Steve?
Yeah.
Like checking their Facebook when the commercials come on?
No, like...
No, it's not reachable at all. They're just...
They don't have a TV.
They're not watching TV. They're watching on the internet. They're watching on...
What are these people...
So this is, they have television, but they're doing it on VOD. Why? The ad loads on VOD are a lot less now, right?
Typically, yes.
Yeah.
Why?
Because if you see the same commercial over and over and over again, you don't need...
Because of burnout? Interesting. Anyway, I thought you guys would appreciate that.
I apologize.
Amanda, I was looking at some of your materials, and this one stuck out to me. It was a bold statement. Music programming must have powerful multi-platform digital marketing. Is multi-platform critical for success in the future, and why?
Absolutely. Well, YouTube as a platform is critical to music success. A song is typically not streamed nearly as much if it's not on YouTube. Monetization, though, on platforms like Spotify is crucial. So overall, the multi-platform strategy and how people discover music from different platforms like Musical.ly, Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube, the way those things work together is very important. And I think everybody in the industry is still trying to figure out what that science is and how they're all related to one another, where people are finding content and then where they're consuming it. And we play into that because we're programming music all the time in our own programming. And so we're sort of playing in that game of music discovery.
So if it's all about attention, this is an I stole this off your deck, Jeff. Explain this.
Yeah, so, you know, we invest a ton of money with great storytellers, you know, Donald Glover, Ryan Murphy, the people that are making the great programming that's on television right now. And the quality of that attention, when you sit down to watch Legion and you've heard about it or you're into it, you're focused, you're on the biggest screen in your house, you know, you've got your popcorn, you press play on demand. That type of attention that you have when somebody is really, you know, ready for that experience is fundamentally different from the experience that most of the social and alternative distribution channels have, where people are literally flicking through a screen and an impression could be as little as 2 seconds to count and make an advertiser pay. It's just fundamentally different quality of attention.
Let's talk about that. So everything's about attention. Steve, I'm going to have you interpret what we're looking at here, but or actually, Steve, so what are we looking at here?
Yeah, thanks. This is a correlation between attention scores and conversion rates. Basically, this is three different campaigns. And if you read it from the left to the right, that the first campaign that had a lower attention score did not convert to an action. In this case, it was to sales. And the as you got higher up the scale for a higher attention score, it converted to more conversion.
And a conversion is a visit to a website?
A conversion could be a visit to a website, to an app, or it could be even like what we do for show promos where you can, like, if they saw the ad, did they watch the program? Yeah.
Tune in. Interesting.
Yeah. Tune in.
Yeah. We're running low on time, so I want to fly through this. So, and then this is measuring, what is this looking at?
This is an example of over a period of time, I think it was 3 months, from attention score for a campaign. And what it demonstrates is that there was wear over the course of the 3 months. And what causes attention score to change is either turning off the TV, which is obvious, changing the channel, pulling up the guide, or fast-forwarding.
So you're measuring attention and showing that there's creative wear. And this slide shows the primary factors as why people are tuning out of commercials. It has to do with the creative, the show, or being overexposed. Is that right?
That's correct, yeah.
And then this slide I thought was really interesting. You're able to track the optimal frequency. So that means now using smart TVs, advertisers can identify a saturation point where, you know, you've kind of spent enough money. Is that right?
Yeah, so we can monitor because it's in real time. We can see as the campaign progresses that at some point there's a diminishing return on frequency.
So I want to go back to something Jeff just said, which is seconds.
Watch
time. Time and attention.
Right.
I know that Danson has amazing view-through rates. People will finish them all the way. But when you compare, isn't 20 seconds on a television more powerful than a second on Facebook? I don't know. I mean, Amanda, how do your advertisers feel about, you know, YouTube, for instance, or an integration?
I mean, I think that they do look at watch time and engagement, I think, is really powerful. If you can get people to not only watch the content, but comment or like, express some kind of emotion, share it, right? That's really powerful. And, you know, our argument, too, is that we have so much engagement that we're able to get people to then create themselves and be a part of a campaign in a bigger way. So, you know, how we kind of price campaigns or how we look at it is a little bit different than television because you're getting so much more information about that audience and more engagement.
So incidentally, the graph, sorry to not set this up, the graph we're looking at here is a chart in Recode today that Facebook put out where they looked at people watching television, and those spikes are the commercial breaks. So I think it's pretty consistent with a lot of our behavior. That would be, if this is me at home, this would be visits to the refrigerator. So people are clearly doing both.
So, you know, one way to do that is to get rid of the commercial breaks, right? There's no commercial breaks on Netflix. People pay attention, they watch their show, and then even before you could reach for the remote, the next episode is starting again. So the stuff that we're working on now is to actually keep that viewership up as high as possible, but still allow the brands to be part of it. And so when you're watching live sports, there's going to be commercial breaks, but that doesn't mean in the break you need to go to a commercial. What we're working on is an unlimited sports product now. This one happens to be brought to you by Chevrolet. And you still get that brand impression, you still get the audio from the commercial, but you're still in the venue of the live sports event. And this is a new product that we're going to start to test at the end of June in sports and hope to use during digital views of live sports across FS Go, whether you're watching it on a phone or on the desktop or on a connected device. New ad formats that keep people in the programming.
What's your advice, Amanda, for creators and people in marketing, people that are creating the next generation of television, which I appreciate you're all here because I know you're all in the weeds on this stuff. What's your advice for people going into the future?
I guess I think we're in a really exciting time, so it's don't be afraid. and I don't think anybody who's here is, but really seeing all of the transformation with the platforms is a big opportunity. And I think that, you know, even within our two companies, there are things to do together that are really interesting for activations, you know, across linear OTT applications and these sort of social video platforms.
What was the question?
What's your advice for creators?
I think it's a time to challenge all the assumptions. I mean, the commercial TV ad model has worked for the last 60 plus years, but I increasingly see media agencies and brands think that programming is all interchangeable and they're using the ad breaks to basically, you know, drop a load of ads on people. That's not how it works anymore. And so I think you really have to fundamentally use all the power of the internet, all the power of our great storytellers, and come up with new models that allow commercial TV still to exist, which I think is important, right? We want as many people to be able to watch TV as possible, even if they're not willing to pony up $11 a month. And the era of the 30-second commercial, I think, is coming to an end.
Steve?
I hope not. I would say keep those creative juices going, but also embrace data to help your decision making.
Good. Thank you, guys.
Okay.
I think we're done. Please, can everyone join me giving them a round of applause for making it?
Thank you.
Paige Albiniak is editorial director of Promax BDA. LaFern Cusack is executive producer of the Daily Brief podcast and senior producer at Promax BDA. Video helper provided the music. Digital producer Kate LaCaire-Marion and social media coordinator Kristen Craik contribute to Daily Brief. Follow Paige on Twitter at Paige A, follow LaFern at LaFern Cusack, follow Promax BDA at Promax BDA. You can reach out to us at dailybrief@promaxbda.org. Subscribe to the Daily Brief podcast on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.